For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome to Orioles on the Verge. This is Zach Spedden's win, as always, by Bob Phelan and Nick Stevens. And on this episode, we take questions from our listeners about all things Orioles, including Major League and Minor League topic. Most of our questions do come in through our Discord community, which anyone can join. There is a link to that in the show notes. But if you follow us on social media or you're a member of our Patreon community who's not in Discord, you can always feel free to reach out to us with a question, and we might take it on the air. I will start with this question from Billy. And before anybody answers and before anybody listens to this, we're not proposing the Orioles actually do this. It's just a fun little exercise. Start, bench, cut. Gunnar Henderson, Adley Rutschman, Jackson Holliday. I'll start with Bob.
And I think he did preface this, like, who would you start your, if you had a dynasty team and you're picking, who would you want to, you know, headline your team along those lines? I'm starting Gunnar Henderson. I think he's an MVP as soon as this year, potentially. I would put money on him winning one before he turns 30, though, that is for sure. I will bench Adley, just because even if he doesn't perform with the bat, that's just the guy I want in my clubhouse. And I'm sorry, I can't have someone that's striking out 50% of the time on my team. See ya, Jackson, you got to go. No, it's a super tough question because all these guys, defense up the middle, qualities that you can't really find many places, and the Orioles have three plus many more in their organization. It's quite an awesome problem to have. But yeah, I think at that this point, that's the only answer I can come up with.
Yeah, this one, it was fun to think about. But I had the same. Gunnar, I think he's a potential multi-time MVP, to be honest. I'm starting Gunnar, benching Adley, cut Holliday, and that has nothing to do with his start to his pro career up to this point. This will come out on the podcast feed like later in the week, so maybe he's already got two home runs by then. We'll see. But yeah, I just don't think that you can quantify Adley's true contribution to this team or any team he's on, so I would still want him on the team, even if it is just on the bench.
Yeah, make it unanimous. I'll go with the same order. Start Gunnar, bench Adley, cut Holliday, all for the reasons that Bob and Nick mentioned. And no, I'm not concerned. We talked about this earlier in the week. I'm not concerned about Holliday's slow start. But for the purpose of this exercise, I put the players in that order.
All right, so Billy's original question, how he originally worded the question. Let's see. We won't do that one. Vivek, I think Bob was about to answer. Jump in there. Vivek's question is, while time is being given to Jackson Holliday to adjust, when do you consider potentially making a switch if production doesn't turn around? Connor Norby, for example, at second base. Zach, what do you think about that one?
I think you give Holliday at least another 2 or 3 weeks how things shake out, because remember, Adley Rutschman got off to a really slow start in his major league career. Gunnar Henderson got off to a bad start last year. And the lineup is making up for it in other areas. Now, if it gets to a point where the lineup needs a little bit of a jolt and Holliday is struggling and it's, you know, 3 weeks from now, I think then you consider the change. And then Norby would be the logical option if you're looking strictly at who can play second base. I do wonder, though, if the left-handed hitting aspect of that is going to come into play. But at the same time, if Heston Kerstad could stick around, then maybe you're not as concerned about having a left-handed hitter there, so you could go with Norby. So I think that if Holliday continues to struggle for the next few weeks, you have to consider that. But I feel like Holliday's going to snap out of this before too long and render that moot.
Yeah, I agree. I think, yeah, we talked about it a lot on the last episode. They're going to give him at least a month from the time they brought him up to see progress made. It's like you said with Gunnar, it was about 4 or 5 weeks before he started to adjust and really make his rookie of the year campaign get started. So plenty of time still. I think as people were complaining about Austin Hayes recently, on the Baltimore Sports and Life message board, I'll shout them out, our old home. Someone was just bringing up slumps that Austin Hayes have had in the past, even when he's had good seasons. And I think there's been plenty of one for 30s and that type of thing in there. So still plenty of time to have a really good season. I think they'll give him plenty of time. And yeah, maybe if it doesn't happen, and we talked about before, you give him a reset, you bring up guys like Mayo and Norby to give them a shot in the meantime, but not worried. Eoj Mata. Oh, sorry, Nick.
No, go ahead to the next one.
All right, next question. I'm finally pronouncing it right. Eoj Mata says, when does the FCL and DSL begin play, and when do you expect rosters to be made available for them, and who are we excited to watch play down there, Nick?
Well, who am I excited to watch? I jotted two names down, one at each level, which FCL is going to start May 24th. It ends July 25th. So probably not going to see the draft prospects get to the FCL this year. DSL, I don't think there's an exact date yet, but that'll be like first week of June, probably. Luis Almeida is the easy answer, I think, for the FCL, and it's a good answer. All the injuries he had last year and surgery that finally ended this year, it'd be nice to see him have a hot start in the FCL. I'm going to go with Edwin Amparo because I think he broke something last year. I don't know what, but it was a significant injury, if I remember correctly. He's a 19-year-old switch hitting shortstop with real power potential. And I know it was written at the time when he signed that the Orioles liked his hit tool from both sides of the plate. He got a $650,000 signing bonus, so clearly a well-sought-after player. I'm excited to see what he can do healthy this year. And in the DSL, it's Yimon Brown. This guy, switch hitting shortstop. I love signing day and scouring the internet and social media for clips and information to share. And when I shared a Brown video, I will say that a former pro player slid into the DMs and said, that swing is going to be dangerous. Obviously, he's a 16, 17-year-old kid. So, like, well, got some time to go there. But I love watching this kid. He posts a ton of videos on Instagram. If you want to see any, I would look this kid up, give him a follow. A pitcher, I will throw another name out there as well. A pitcher, Yaki Mondesir. The Orioles said he's up to 94 when he signed. I've seen a few ticks higher in some other places, but I don't know if I fully trust the sources. But still, this is a flamethrower, and I just hope he has control because the Orioles have found a number of these 17-year-old kids who can throw at like 98 miles an hour, but none of them have been able to throw strikes to save their life. So hopefully Mondesir is a little bit different and he can throw some strikes this year in the DSL.
For me, at the FCL, and I think Almeida is a good answer and definitely a guy I want to keep my eye on, but at the FCL, I'm really interested to see what Joshua Lorenzo does. It feels like of the lower level prospects, this might be the guy that we've underrated to this point just because we don't have eyes on him. Yeah, you can look at the stat line last year and feel like that there's some things in there that aren't great. You know, batting average, OPS weren't eye-popping. But at the same time, you dig a little bit deeper, you realize this guy has tremendous amount of power, and he's only 16. He just turned 17 last August. So he's going to play all of this season in the FCL as a 17-year-old. And I could see him being one of those players who is a real outlier there in the sense that he's hitting for real power, because I never look for home runs and frankly don't dig too deep into extra base hits at the short season levels. I just expect the power to come along later, but Lorenzo could kind of be the guy where the home run power is there from the start. And then in the DSL, I'm really curious to see what Steven Martinez does in his first full season. This feels like a prototypical Orioles prospect in the sense that he's athletic, has a tremendous amount of raw power. There's some questions about how the hit tool is going to play, but I think that that's going to develop. And then while this is going to be really hard for us to quantify, the defense sounds great. Given what we've read about his speed and his arm strength, it seems like he could stick in center field. And it's a risk to say that with a player who's as young as Martinez is, but I'm very, very curious to see what he does.
Yeah, first of all, I'm just, at first I was like confused when they moved the FCL and DSL up on the calendar, but I actually love it now. We're going to get to see in quotes, we're going to get to hear about, read about, read box scores for these guys sooner. And their season ends, and if they are developed enough, if the organization is confident in them enough, and Delmarva needs someone, there you go. You can continue that season, and yeah, I think it's a really good idea. As for the FCL, I'm just gonna. There's the obvious names, and the names that you guys have said are fantastic. For me, Jordan Sanchez or Jordan Sanchez, the Cuban guy that the Orioles signed late, not this international signing period, but the one before. Just feel like haven't heard anything about him since he signed. Very curious to see how he does. And I could see him being a guy that does go to Delmarva after the FCL if he has success there. And Yerber Ruiz, an outfielder that I think is a little bit of a sleeper prospect, will be in the FCL. And really, there's a bunch of guys that I could really just dig into and get into the nitty gritty of the FCL and the DSL from last year. But for the DSL, I will say Emilio Sanchez, Steven Martinez, Yimon Noel, for sure. Keep an eye out on those guys. But Elvin Garcia, another guy I really like the upside for. Yeah, I'm really excited about it. I think Abraham Cohen back to the FCL is a guy that is underrated. Luis Guevara has a lot of upside. I think the Orioles are just going to do better and better when it comes to the international signings, and can't wait to see what happens.
Go now to this question from Matt. Who is Carolina League Pitcher of the Week, Trey Gibson, and why have I never heard of him? Start with Bob.
For that, we'll bring in Chris Respetar to give the answer. No, he was on him first in our Discord. If you're not signed up for the Discord, sign up. In the general baseball talk, he was all over Trey Gibson before the season started. And I'm like, this is the undrafted free agent that the Orioles signed. It's an interesting take that he could be a top 30 prospect in this organization. And he got hit a little bit in his first start or two, but you kind of saw the stuff, honestly, right away. And then his last time out, he had a fantastic outing, 5 innings, struck out 8 batters. I'm starting to buy the hype. And you're the pitcher. You never die. It's just one Michael Fauret. Just we talked about Delmarva's pitching staff as a whole. It's ridiculous. Yeah, Trey Gibson, add him to the list. There's about 50 pitchers that I feel like I'm psyched to see pitch on any given day in the Orioles organization.
If only there was a podcast that highlighted, went over the games from the previous day and like to talk about some guys in a little bit more detail sometimes. Trey Gibson mentioned there a couple times. Anyway, all love Trey Gibson, your undrafted free agent out of Liberty. That Jerry Falwell, you over there, but he is a Newport News kid, so I got love for him. Fellow 757 kid, did not pitch in 2023 at Liberty because I think he looked at a girl after 7 p.m. when he was walking around campus, so they suspended him for the year. Scam school. But here's what Joe Doyle wrote about. Pull this up. It's not loading. Here he goes. I'm just going to read straight from Joe Doyle's scouting report on him last year. So for anyone who hasn't heard of Trey Gibson, here's a little bit more detail. Prototype righty with a riding fastball and the ability to throw strikes. Been up to the mid-90s, sits in the lower 90s. Devastating breaking ball that he pounds the zone with early and late in counts. A hard, firm, sweeping break. Tunnels impressively off the fastball. Plus breaking ball as he ages. There's also a changeup that has given lefty bats fits when it's on. He's already physically matured, so he likely won't add too much velo, but he operates with now stuff, projects as a back-end rotation starter profile, missed the entire 2023 season for unspecified reasons, specifically a suspension. He's no longer on the Liberty roster, so teams will have that on their radar. I imagine whatever the suspension was, whether it was looking at a girl or whatever it was probably the reason why he wasn't drafted. But Orioles picked him up, and I'm glad he's in the organization, to be honest. Sounds promising.
He looks really good right now. That first outing was rough, but the stuff has looked better, and the results have been a lot better in his next two outings. So Chris in our Discord channel might be onto something here.
Let's hope so. Alex has a question, wants to know, do the Orioles lead the AL in runs scored by the end of the year? And if not, which team does, Bob?
I'm going to have to say we do. Just because, look, Kerstad's, Austin Hayes is hurt. What are we going to do? What are we going to do without Austin Hayes? Heston Kerstad's going to come up and steal his spot, hopefully for the rest of the season. I think we're already fifth right now in the majors in runs scored, and I can only see it getting better as the year goes on, honestly, as Holiday clicks, as more guys come up in some of the older, I would say they're still solid players, but when our expectations are this high and we have so much talent in the minors, they get passed by. I think it's only going to continue to raise the ceiling of what the offense can do. So because I don't really know, I would say it's between the Braves, the Dodgers, in the Orioles by the end of the year.
Looking at the AL specifically, it's kind of interesting to me that Cleveland is two runs ahead of the Orioles right now. Cleveland has a good lineup, but I always kind of think of them as a team that when they're contending is really doing so on the strength of their pitching. Right now, they're hitting well. If I had to guess, though, I do think the Orioles lead the league in runs scored for the reasons that Bob mentioned, which are they're second right now in the league by a very narrow margin, just two runs, without some of the guys that are expected to be big contributors hitting the ball well. We haven't, you know, we've talked about Jackson Holliday a lot, but Cedric Mullins just got going last week. We haven't seen the best of Anthony Santander yet. Yeah, so there's a lot of players where I think that that's going to continue to raise the ceiling of what this team can do. If there's a threat, though, for outscoring the Orioles in the American League this year, it's Texas. Just because of the talent they have on that roster. I don't know if their pitching staff is going to hold up over the course of a full season, but they can hit. So keep an eye on the Rangers, but I do think the Orioles right now could lead the league in runs scored at the end of the year.
I'd probably have to agree just because I don't see Cleveland maintaining this kind of pace that they're scoring. Josh Naylor, I love that guy. He always plays so hard and gets hurt eventually, and that's a big chunk of their offense. If he goes down, I do think Texas is the biggest threat. I don't really know if Kansas City, I'm not familiar with their system. I don't know if they have like some young guys that could come up eventually. I don't know how big of a splashy move they want to make at the trade deadline. They're in fourth right now in the AL. I don't know if I see them as a threat. Boston is falling apart tremendously right now, injury-wise. New York is in six right now. They've got 100, so they're 23 back of the Orioles, and Aaron Judge can't hit to save his life. Gleyber Torres isn't playing well. As long as that team stays healthy and they start clicking, maybe they become a threat. I don't really see anybody else either. I don't like them at all, pitching or hitting this year. Houston is falling apart. They're... Other than Jose Altuve, I don't know who's doing, and Kyle Tucker, I don't know who's doing anything with Houston. I'm a closet Tigers fan. I'm not going to lie. I like this offense and the potential that they have, but I don't see any other threat. I think it's going to be Orioles at the top this year.
All right. Kenneth DiPietro would like to know, with Cade Povich and Chase McDermott, do you think they both make major league appearances this year? And if so, in what capacity? Like, do you see them debut as starters or fill a DL Hall type role later on the season? Albert Suarez is trying to keep them in the minors. Albert Suarez hive rise up. He's dominating once again as we record this live. But what do you think, Nick?
McDermott is looking better and better these last two outings. That last outing, he had 7 strikeouts and 3 2/3, 19 whiffs, which was like 5 more than anyone else in AAA on Sunday. I think you keep stretching him out as a starter, but I could see him, I've said this before, I'm going to stick with it. I think you bring him up after the trade deadline in that time frame as a bullpen piece. Let him eat out of the bullpen. He can fill that DL Hall role that DL filled last year. Povich, I don't know about you guys. I don't see Povich working out of the bullpen. I think he's either in the rotation in the big leagues or in AAA's rotation. I don't see him. I feel like a lot of people instantly be like, oh, well, he's not working out as a starter. Throw him in the bullpen. I think for a lot of guys, that plays well. Chase McDermott can blow 97, 98 past you in the bullpen in a one-inning stint with that curveball on his breaking stuff. Povich, I just don't know if his stuff is going to translate to a bullpen role, to be honest. So I could see Povich maybe coming up first and getting some starts, but McDermott settling in the bullpen. I forgot all about Albert Suarez, to be honest. It's good to see him pitching well. Burns, Grayson obviously pitching well. That's three. If Means comes back, another good line didn't look great, but he got up to, what, 64, 65 pitches. That's good. Sounds like he's still feeling all right. That's tremendous. If he comes back, that's four. Like, I'm not giving Means automatically a rotation spot when he comes back. I don't think he's looked good in these rehab starts. He's got to earn it. And Povich is a lefty. Povich throws harder. Povich has better stuff. Povich is pitching like one of the best pitchers in all of minor league baseball. I think if Povich keeps pitching like this, I'm giving him a shot before I put Means back in this rotation, to be honest.
Yeah, I kind of agree with Nick in that if one of them goes into the bullpen role, it's McDermott. I think that his stuff could play up in that short outing scenario. And, you know, depending on how things go with Tyler Wells this year, we hope he bounces back from the elbow injury quickly and is able to make some starts. But if you get to the point like you did last year where you've got to transition him into a bullpen role, McDermott could also be right there with Wells filling a similar spot. Maybe you put Wells in higher leverage situations because he has the experience, but McDermott could be that guy who comes out of the bullpen, who gives you a couple of innings, or he could come in a tight spot later in the game and get you some big outs. Knowing how the Orioles handle things, they will not view that as a permanent move, and I would expect that if McDermott is in the bullpen in the major leagues to end 2024, he will go into spring training 2025 as a rotation candidate. But I could see him there. And then I agree with Nick, especially the more I watch Povich this year, seeing how refined he looks, that's a starter right there. That is a textbook starting pitcher. And it's just a matter now of can he sustain this for the next few months and then get that opportunity in the major leagues, because he would be the perfect guy to bring up down the stretch when you just decide, you know what, we're hopefully the Orioles could be in this spot. We know we're going to the playoffs. We want to give our starters a rest. We're going to skip someone's turn in the rotation, or they're only going to go out. And this could be where Povich comes out of the bullpen. The only scenario where I could see Povich coming out of the bullpen, we're going to have this starter only go three or four innings tonight. We'll bring in Povich behind him, give him a clean inning to work with, make it as close to a starter's routine as we can. But I think that right now you have to be preparing Povich to start this year and be penciled into the rotation next year with the way he's pitching.
Povich looks so damn good. And I completely agree with Nick that he's a starter all the way. Not to say that he couldn't succeed in a relief role, because if you got five or six pitches coming at you, I mean, that's a lot to deal with too out of the bullpen. But yeah, he's got the starter's repertoire. He's just whiffing people left and right. Leads all of AAA in whiffs, I want to say. I think we tweeted that out, or at least he's right up there. And honestly, if the Tyler Wells thing landed on a different day, I would not be surprised if Povich would have got that shot right away. He's ready now. If there's an injury, I think he's available, he'll be up, and he looks like he could be the guy that the Orioles traded for. Keep doubting the trades, but Elias, he knows what he's doing. He went after Povich, saw what the upside he had, and he's finally showing it off now in AAA. And McDermott, I agree. He had 19 whiffs in what, four innings, his last appearance, and just stupid stuff, but still walking a ton of batters. So yeah, I think it doesn't hurt to start him off in a relief role this year, like D.L. Hall last year. And then you can, you know, go into spring training, he can compete, and maybe he's a guy that you make that decision when the time comes, a la Tyler Wells, D.L. Hall the last couple of years. But yeah, I completely agree with you guys.
We'll wrap up here with this question from Eliza, a host of the Warehouse podcast. And this is an interesting one. Which player not in AAA and not named Samuel Basayo is your best bet to make the majors with the Orioles in the future? He adds here that Enrique Bradfield Jr. is a little bit of a cop-out. So I guess Eliza pulling Enrique Bradfield Jr. off the table for us. We've got to pick someone else, and I'll let Nick be the first to do that.
I'm also assuming, because he only mentioned two hitters in the question, that we're talking hitters and not pitchers, because I could go easy route and pick like a Bowie reliever, but I'm going to stick with hitter, and I'm going catcher. I know Adley's there. I know Basayo is him, but I'm going Silas Ardoy. I think he gets no love. He was a fourth-round draft pick, lauded as the top defensive catcher in his draft class. Major League bloodline as well. We talk about how important that is. His dad played for the Orioles for a brief time, but his dad was an Oriole at one point. He's in Double A now. He's throwing out guys left and right from behind the plate. He took a pitch at the nose, came back later in the week, and roped a 104-mile-per-hour single in his first at bat. Like, the dude is tough back there. He's hitting well in Bowie. He walks a lot. I think if he keeps hitting as the year goes on, I think he's in the majors at some point next year, to be honest. Or at least he's definitely a guy who he's hanging around AAA, and when they need that catcher, he's the guy.
It's a good choice. It's hard to go wrong. For me, it's a guy we talked about in our last episode. It's Judd Fabian, just because, similar to Enrique Bradfield, he could not hit a lick, and his defense and his speed and his just power, if you need someone to run into one, we've talked about in the past, like, that's a major league fourth or fifth outfielder already right there. And it seems like he's making strides in cutting down the swing and miss, or at least cutting down the strikeouts. So if that's the case, even better. He could be the starting center fielder after Cedric Mullins. If you got an outfield of Kowser, Fabian, Kerstad / Beavers, I mean, that's not too shabby either. So Fabian's my guy. I really like the way he's trending right now.
I'll stick with Bowie. I'm going to take Frederick Benkosme. Right now, what Benkosme is doing is he's hitting for power. He's getting better at shortstop. We talked about this a lot on our last episode, but to me, he's starting to answer the two big questions that I think have surrounded him to this point, which is, you know, is he going to have any value defensively? The answer is yes, because he's going to be able to play three infield positions. Even if shortstop is not always where you want him to be, he will be able to fill in there. And he's going to have a good plate approach. He's going to hit for contact. And we're not looking at anything close to Gunnar Henderson power. We're probably not even looking at Jackson Holliday power for Benkosme. But is a 15 to 20 home run season in his prime, especially as a left-handed hitter at Camden Yards, out of the question? Absolutely not. And for an infielder that's going to move around to a few different positions and draw walks and never strike out, that's a good skill set to have.
Can't argue with that.
And with that, that does it for this week's mailbag. Thank you, as always, to our listeners for their thought-provoking questions. We will continue to do this throughout the season. We will be back at a special time next week. Bob and I will be back on next week. So look for more details on that between now and our next episode, which you can find on our multitude of social media channels, including Facebook, Threads, Instagram, X, TikTok, and YouTube. We're also over at Substack, OrielsOnTheBirds.substack.com. And don't forget about our Patreon community. And as a reminder, on May 11th, we will be hosting a live show at Checker Spot Brewing, located a short distance from Camden Yards. Checker Spot, it's a perfect place to come pregame and listen to us, especially if you have tickets to the Orioles and Diamondbacks matchup that afternoon. If you don't have tickets, come to the show and then stick around Checker Spot afterwards. They will have the game on. We'll have a little bit of a viewing party. It should all be a lot of fun. And we will have more details on an episode between now and the 11th, including guests, the format of the episode, and more. So you're not going to want to miss that. Please join us on May 11th. For Bob Phelan and Nick Stevens, this is Zach Sweden. You've been listening to Orioles on the Verge, part of the Believe Podcast Network.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.